Johnny smiled. There were 16 loads of gold on the planet, almost as good as the one they had mined. In the Andes and the Himalayas, they just weren't that close to home, and it would have been more public to have mined them. Ah, yes. All these other lodes were also associated with uranium. There were thick, thick, thick records of Earth's existing mineral resources. Hundreds of years of security chiefs had continued to log the findings of the drones, which were used for security but were essentially mineral spotters. The company, with its semi-core methods of mining, could go down almost to the molten core, to the very bottom of the crust, without breaking through. And they were content to mine what they had and conserve their assets of unmined wealth. Turl had simply removed the records from company view for his own purposes. Ores, ores, ores. Metal, metals, metals. The planet was still wealthy in resources. Johnny recorded every page rapidly. This was not what he was here for, but it was nice to know their planet had not been bankrupted of minerals. They would need them.
Ah.
Angus had found what they were really looking for just now. Turl's bug probe. It was an oblong box with an aerial sticking out of it and a disc cup on the tip of the aerial. It had on-off switches for various frequencies and light domes and buzzers. Johnny had done his apprenticeship well in the electronics shop. He knew that no wave this could detect would pass through lead or a lead alloy. Ordinarily, this would not be a factor since any bug of any kind whatsoever would also not pass through lead. Therefore, why detect it since it wouldn't work as a bug or button camera if it had lead over it? The first job was to rig these switches. Johnny made a trip to electronics stores and got what he wanted. He came back to find that Kerr had swept the area for bugs and found none. They chose where Turl would do his shop work. In Chirk's former reception office. It was big enough to work in, and the size console it would be would go in and out of the door. While Johnny, at his desk, worked on the bug probe, the other two rigged a workbench out of a metal slab and welded it to the floor, and then armor annealed the welds so it would be an awful lot of trouble to move. They even got a stool and put it in front of it. When they had finished, they had a very nice layout. Johnny moved his work over to it. He had made excellent progress. Using micro-button transmitters employed normally in remote controls, he had rigged every switch in the probe so that when it was turned on, it would send out an impulse from the remote relay. These relays took a microscope to see properly. They were fastened in with a small molecular spray. The worst part was getting them to stay where one wanted them while spraying them down. But the eye that could detect them unaided had never been made. Using a scope set at a distance from the probe, he clicked each switch on in turn, and the scope bounced in response. The next part was hard because it involved the adaption of iris leaves taken from tubes of plane viewers. These were small devices that automatically adjusted the volume of a light path. They would close their concentric leaves from wide open to totally shut. They had to take these delicate things apart and spray them, molecules thick, with lead and reassemble them, so they would not only work but would go on working, opening and closing. Angus was the best at this sort of work. They then got some contraction rings and put them around these leaded irises and installed micro-buttons in them to activate them. When they had built about 15 of these, they made a thorough and extensive test. When the probe was clicked on, the iris instantly closed. When the probe was turned off, the irises sprang open. In other words, the leaded irises would be shut whenever the probe was on, thus putting a lead screen over any bug and making it undetectable, and for the moment unable to see and hear. But when the probe was off, the screen would be off, and any bug or device could see and hear.